With Inspire Podcast, we're dedicated to bringing you the latest research in medicine, dentistry, veterinary medicine, and everything in between, from both students and academics in a language everyone can understand.
If you want to get in touch, please email us at inspiredjournalpodcast@gmail.com. You can find our website at www.inspirestudentjournal.co.uk, where you can access original research and articles from students, or find out about how you can get involved.
Today we'll be discussing a really current topic called sleep hygiene. Sleep hygiene, I feel, has become very, it's a topical topic that's been discussed among students everywhere. And I think a lot of students complain, or definitely have said, I personally have noticed, a very poor sleep hygiene during my university years. And that's something I think we'll be discussing today, our personal experiences, anything we might have read about. And but first, let's have a little catch up. Halima is back with us today.
Yes.
So I think we should do a little like catch up for the Halima session. How have you been?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, it's been a while. I've just had my finals. So in Cardiff, the medical degree is that you sit one of your biggest exams at the end of year four. And so I've just been keenly revising, obviously. No procrastination. I say that sarcastically, but I've been keeping up with the podcasts and so far, and they've been really good, but I'm just glad to be back, I guess, and kick off like our summer projects. I know that some of us will have started or finished anyway, so
have you broken up for the summer then? Or
no, I don't break up until the end of July, so I've got a couple more weeks.
And then when you're back, are you back September?
And then I'm back, yeah, September, because I'll be intercalating, hopefully.
Oh, yay, so, that's exciting.
Yeah, so that'll be really good. So I'll have normal holidays for a year. That would be great. I'm so looking forward to that.
Oh, my God.
But I'm doing it in cellular molecular pathology. So, and hopefully looking at cancer and infections more closely, which will be interesting.
So, yeah. That would be really interesting. That sounds really intriguing. Some nice content for next year. You got to share with us all your lab experiences.
Yeah, definitely. But how's your bread making going, Sam? Are you still continuing that?
Yeah. As I think I mentioned on the previous episode, it became more of a pizza making just because of some of the practical constraints where I live. The oven isn't good enough, basically, for baking bread. But I keep a regular track of that, pretty constant. I actually, I saw a YouTube video, was it this morning? Or I think it was yesterday, about the oldest, or the longest running evolution experiment currently. So I think it's been going on for about 33 years. And it's effectively, they take a kind of a strain of E. coli initially, and they've just cultured and recultured over 33 years. And because E. coli is, for lots of reasons, but basically E. coli goes through, I think it's about 6 or 7 or 8 generations per day or something like that, perhaps even more. And so it's a really good mechanism of studying how evolution works. And this study they've made lots of really interesting discoveries from it. But we won't get too into that. But the reason why it's relevant is that when they're culturing the E. coli, they take at the end of each day, 99% of the bacteria is thrown away, and only about 1% is retained and then cultured for the next day. And it's interesting because that's exactly how you make sourdough bread, is you have your culture that you keep in your fridge, and you only keep a small amount of it. And it's just to make sure that if you keep all of it, it ends up requiring exponentially more and more and more food. And they talked about it, that if you did it with the E. coli, within, I think it was 46 days, the amount of glucose solution the colony would require is the same volume as the entire known universe. So, yeah. So that's something to think about, which is why I don't want to be using all of the flour in the known universe. So you've got to end up taking a small sample off and growing that. But it's quite interesting because it's basically the same thing.
Well, I always imagine like sort of the culture for sourdough bread, like Venom, you know, from the character. Yeah. Because it's just like one of those sort of, you feed it more and more, it becomes larger and larger. So like one of my housemates, she got into baking at the beginning of this academic year, so in like September time. And she went away and she gave her like sort of, is it the sourdough culture to her boyfriend to look after? And he didn't follow, like she'd made a whole list of instructions and he unfortunately didn't follow it. And it came to a point where when she came back after like 2 weeks, he was like, it didn't look like dry enough. So I needed to add more and more flour. And I was he was like, it's requiring like 2 bags of flour now. And we were like, yeah, you need to like calm down.
You have to get rid of it.
She was like, you didn't follow any. She was like, you didn't follow any of the instructions. And he was like, yeah.
It's really not that hard. It's really not that difficult. I had one of my borderline disasters was some mold managed to get in, was growing on top of the culture. And that normally happens if you don't take out a small amount and then refeed that small amount regularly, because the bacteria in the yeast should be able to maintain their own environment and kill off anything that gets in. But if you screw up, then there's a chance that something can get in. And if it does get in, that it can then grow and survive. So I just kind of got a bit lazy with my feeding routine. And so some mold got in. And you would normally think, oh my God, there's mold in here. That's it. I'm done. There's nothing I can do. Just scrape the mold off the top. And good as new. And there's no mold in it now. It's so easy. It's almost impossible to screw up. Like, it's really difficult to screw up. So even when you think you've destroyed it and you've ruined it, you probably haven't. Like, they're very, very stable and strong.
It's really resistant.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, my friend, she just ended up, she was like, I'm just going to have to get rid of, like, 3/4 of the batter because you've literally, it's grown in size. Yeah. So, like, you haven't been taking the small amount out. And so, yeah, that's what she ended up doing.
Yeah. But, yeah. No, it's a... It's a good hobby, I think, for anybody who is interested in cellular biology or anything like that, because there is a lot of things you can kind of think about with regards to that. Obviously, you know, you want to... It's also kind of a bit of an evolutionist hobby as well. You want to challenge your culture, but you don't want to kill it off. So you want to make it fight for its existence, but not fight so hard that it's... not able to grow, but at the same time you don't want it to live in abundance, because when your culture lives in abundance, it gets lazy and it doesn't protect itself as well from invaders like molds and other breeds of bacteria. So it is a fun project for any biologists or bakers out there, and it gives you sort of a good practical view of some of the things that you might end up learning about in a biology degree or something like that. So it's not entirely irrelevant to cellular biology.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Cellular microbiology, I think that's why I kind of liked the degree, just because there was so much scope for where you could go. It's quite generalist and it's quite applicable to clinical medicine, and it provides you with that science. So I definitely appreciate the bread making and the time that it goes into it.
Maybe you'll come over to... Oh, I was going to say, maybe...
The dark side.
Maybe you'll end up coming over to my side of research and you can be looking at all of the intricate mitochondrial processes that I've been hopefully publishing very soon. So watch this space.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. Do you know which sort of like journals or publications, like sites you're applying for? Was it just one in particular?
We're just going to go as good as we can. Obviously Cell is always the dream. I'll just keep my fingers crossed that Cell or Nature will want to publish our review.
I think it's really good that you kind of got one under your belt now, because I definitely found most people wait for the year, like year 3 or year 4 medicine to like publish, and to be honest, with COVID, it's kind of royally screwed over a lot of people in terms of wanting to publish. So actually getting an article done now is really good.
Well, it's one of those things that, I mean, I can't pretend to be the standard medical student in that I do have experience sending things off for publication before. I have done a degree and I have worked in research before, so I can't quite claim to be as exceptional as a first-time medical student doing this. But my aim is to publish at least once each year, at the very minimum, once a year of my medical school, so that then by the time I hit my final year, I will hopefully, fingers crossed, have minimum 5 publications under my belt, and then I'll look ultra fancy, and then I'll be able to...
That's
a big goal.
That's aspirational.
You have to aim high with these things.
Set high goals.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's something to push yourself.
Definitely.
You can push yourself.
My mum always says, shoot for the stars, because if you fall anywhere short, you'll land on the moon.
Exactly.
So, like, it's still exceptional. Exactly.
But I wouldn't be able to do that if it weren't for my rigorous sleep routine. And that nicely brings us... I always do this, but I think it's great.
Wow.
What would we define as sleep hygiene?
So I think sleep hygiene is to do with the process in which someone to go to sleep, and the way in which the environment in which they sleep in as well. I think that, to me, that's what my understanding of sleep hygiene. So I think there's been like big discussions in the news, isn't there, in particular about the use of phones and like technology before going to bed, and how we should be reducing that because of like light is it from such like screens, for instance, how they play a role in delaying the point in which we fall asleep. So that's something that I have started to acknowledge, but I think it's definitely something that needs to be improved on in my life anyway. What about you, Natasha?
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar to you. I think I have like good and bad days with sleep personally. It's a very fluctuant relationship. But yeah, sleep hygiene to me is also like sleep schedule, the regularity with which one goes to sleep. I think that's a big nearly criteria if I think maintaining good sleep hygiene, and the quality of sleep as well, because I think there is, like, you know, we'll be discussing probably that later, but like non-REM sleep and REM sleep, and which is good for you, I think, and that how then good sleep hygiene, I suppose, how that affects the rest of your life and your day-to-day activities. I definitely start to acknowledge that, and I do notice, we all say, like, you know, after a good night's sleep, we feel much better the next day, and I certainly see that in my kind of, I feel more productive, I have more energy. So, yeah, I think that's what sleep hygiene kind of means to me. What about you, Sam?
So I think with sleep hygiene, in terms of officially how it's defined, it makes a distinction between sleep quality and the quality of preparation for sleep. So normally sleep hygiene, and I'm happy to be corrected on this if any of you guys or if anybody wants to send a strongly worded email to the Inspire account, but sleep hygiene in particular deals with the behavioral practices around sleep and those behavioral practices in setting up good sleep. But if we were dealing with the actual quality of sleep itself, then we'd be thinking more down sleep specialists, you know, neurologists who specialize in sleep quality, those kind of things. So we can, you know, I'm still very keen to talk about REM and non-REM sleep and things like that. But I think sleep hygiene in particular is, to me at least, more to do with setting yourself up for a good night's sleep and setting yourself with a good routine around your sleep and good attitudes towards sleep, as opposed to necessarily the quality in itself. Yeah, that's the way that I see it.
But I think the whole point, I think my understanding is that sleep hygiene will help promote improved quality of sleep.
Yeah.
My understanding.
That's my understanding
of so
this well.
I think it's not looking necessarily at like it's like you said, it's like almost like a habit. It should form a habitual state in which you think about going to sleep. It should be a process. Like when you start working, it should become you have like a process. You get out your stationery, you get your laptop, you get your charger and everything like that. And I think the whole idea of sleep hygiene is making sure that you have a system for yourself that's tailored to you, so that you, when you decide that you do want to go to sleep, that you're able to do it well, and that it's like a more naturally higher quality of sleep that for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's setting yourself up for that good night's sleep, that good quality of sleep, and then I suppose that then affects your next day, which would, so it's like cyclical thing, isn't it?
As I said, I think it's all really good that we talk about sleep hygiene, but I think it's really difficult mm-hmm. to actually perform well.
Yeah.
In the sense that you've got to be quite, it is like forming a habit. So it will take a certain number of times and that you, until you start, it starts becoming natural. And I think it, for me anyway, it's definitely something I need to work on. And I'm sure lots of people listening, because I don't think we realise that we sometimes inhibit ourselves from going to sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely lots of really interesting research around sleep hygiene in particular. So not just sleep quality, but the sort of act of falling asleep. And that's something that is going to be fun to talk about. But it, I think it's also important to just, you know, as a kind of disclaimer, to realise that you can have issues with sleep despite having immaculate sleep hygiene, and you can also have perfectly typical sleep while having poor sleep hygiene. So there is, it's the sort of thing where if you went to your, from a clinical point of view, if you went to your doctor with some kind of sleep disturbance or some kind of sleep issue, something like sleep apnea, for example, like obstructive sleep apnea, that wouldn't be a sleep hygiene issue. That would be a sleep issue. So sleep hygiene is sort of like the first point of call for, okay, this patient is having problems with their sleep. Let's think about sleep hygiene. Is everything going well with the way that you're preparing for sleep? And then if you go through all of that stuff and you realize that actually there are still qualitative problems, quantitative problems with the sleep that's happening, then we might start to think more towards maybe there's a neurological issue, or maybe there's a respiratory issue or something like that that's also going on at the same time. So yeah, just because, you know, sleep hygiene is not the be-all and end-all to sleep problems, but I think on a sort of more general population level, it's definitely something that students in particular are going to relate to really, really well. But it's just important to, you know, just because you have a bad relationship with sleep doesn't mean you have some horrible, incurable problem with your sleep that's going to plague you for the rest of your life. It's just, it's that dichotomy, I think, is important to just set out from the go.
Yeah, and I to like further on that point, you know, sleep is multifactorial. It's also dependent on the context in which you're struggling to fall asleep. You know, there are external factors that play on whether someone is able to fall asleep, be it, you know, relationship problems or, you know, stress from external places. But a good sleep hygiene is to help maintain a regularity to it, even in those difficult environments.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you guys... Talk me through both of your guys' general sort of sleep routines. Let's hear what the Inspire podcast, what our relationships with sleep are.
Okay, I'll go first. You can shame me first on my poor sleeping. So to be honest, I have very little in terms of like sleep hygiene. So what I will do is I won't set a time that I'm going to be like, I'm going to go to sleep at this point. Something that I have been actively working on, I'll probably give myself like a limit. Like I won't work past 2 a.m. or something like that. and then I'll make a decision. I'll be like, right, I'm going to sleep now. Sorry, is that too early? Too late, sorry, for your sympathy. I'm a night
Sam's
owl.
Sam's expression, so like, when he said 2 a.m., oh my God.
Like, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm a night owl, so I'll probably start working around when most people finish, should be finishing, so I'll start probably 7 p.m. I'm outing myself now. But, and then I'll work constantly, and then I'll say, all right, I'm going to bed now. I'll just close my laptop, put my phone on a charge, go and, like, brush my teeth, like, just, you know, general hygiene, dental hygiene, and then pack my stuff up for the next day, and then I'll go to bed. And I'll often be lying there for a good half an hour before I fall asleep. But in my head, I'm thinking about, like, random stuff. I don't know. Like, things that I'm going to do the next day, things that I've got to, like, plan. But yeah, and then other than that, then I'm gone.
I think it's interesting because I think there are like a couple of different things that, especially in terms of general sleep, that we can sort of focus in on there. I think one of them that's really important though is the idea that, I think, you know, like, you don't think that you have a routine around bedtime or around going to sleep, but most of us have a routine even if we don't think that we do. And it comes from things like brushing your teeth before you go to bed. Like, most people, I hope, if you don't, you should, brush their teeth twice a day. And normally the brushing of your teeth frames the day in terms of when you wake up and when you go to sleep. And so true. I think most people have, there is some kind of routine about the process of going to bed, even if it's not something they necessarily think of explicitly as this is my bedtime routine, just because it isn't like written down on a whiteboard or post-it notes in your home. So it's a sort of thing that kind of, it's almost like, you know, everybody has mental health, everybody has sleep hygiene, like, everybody has a routine when it comes to their bedtime. It's just,
I nearly think that's like a good thing, because you, well, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but in the sense that it shouldn't be something like sleep hygiene, in my once you, I think, develop a process that works for you and provides you with adequate good amount of sleep in most kind of external environment situations, it shouldn't be something that you have to be like, the work through, it should become very natural to you. It's like, it's a habit,
yeah,
right? And that's, I think that's a good thing, really.
I think that something that I have definitely tried to be more proactive in is making sure that I only sleep in my bed, in the sense that, like, I don't work in bed, I don't do other things, because I definitely found in previous years where I, especially like in student accommodation, you don't have the full house to yourself, do you know what I mean, like you would normally do, where you have lots of different environments, but, you know, you have your bedroom to an extent, most people, and maybe like a lounge area, and sometimes you get tired and of your environment, in the sense of sitting at your desk and doing work. And I often found that. So previous years, I used to just work on my bed. And then I found it increasingly difficult to fall asleep because I associated it with work and the stress that came with work often. And so then I definitely made the conscious choice to be like, if I don't want to work here, go to the library, or go to someone else's, like go to the lounge area where there's a desk, if there's possible, and work on the table there. And that's definitely helped going to sleep, because I've made that separation between personal, like, work.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
No, I would say that's quite similar to me this year. I think I'm going to be shamed again for my little sleep schedule, but very similar to you, Halima. It's night owl again, so tend to work late into the night. I don't, again, have a particular time to set to go to sleep by, but I do try, and because it and it's often dictated by what my schedule is like the following day. So if I'm in at 9 a.m., then that means, in my head anyway, that I can work a little later, like I keep flexible. But if I'm in, say, at 6, then I do try and get at least 6 hours of sleep. I think that's where I try to kind of maintain it, so I, rather than having a time to go to bed by. I try to say, okay, 5 to 6 hours of sleep is what I kind of need to get me through the day. So that's how I maintain my set as in terms of bedtime. And then, yeah, I go generally brush my teeth, wash my face, you know, the whole kind of skincare, that sort of stuff. Don't have a very long skincare routine. I wash my splash my face with water and some soap and put on some cream and I go to bed. Like, I don't have the 10-step night care routine. I respect people who do. I just don't.
Okay, fair enough.
I do respect people who do. I just, it's so much, and there's so much I don't know about it, about skincare. That's maybe another episode for the future. I don't know enough about skincare, and I get confused whenever I try to look into it. So at the moment, I've kept it very,
no,
very
for sure. Minimal. I think it's big business skincare is. So we can always go into that.
Well, actually, yeah. It does raise an interesting point. And it's quite a common thing if you, one of the commonly cited reasons for people waking up during the night and something that good skincare at night can help with, at least anecdotally from my experience, is staying hydrated throughout the night. So one of the leading causes of disrupted sleep is people waking up to get water because they're dehydrated, and also kind of waking up with a headache, waking up just feeling not good. Alternatively, some people will then chug water before they go to bed and have to wake up to urinate in the middle of the night. And so that equally, you kind of have both sides. So one of the things that can be quite useful is trying to limit water loss overnight so that you're not taking on excess water, but that you're also not losing excess water. And that's one thing that using things like body lotions and moisturizers can supposedly help with. Is kind of just helping to trap a bit more moisture in your skin.
Yeah, no, I agree, because that's the main difference. If you look into, I'm quite big into skincare, so I do have maybe a 10-step night routine.
I would love to learn from you.
No, Halima does have a night routine.
I'd love to learn from you. Teach me everything. I don't know enough.
But I think people neglect to realise that skin is a huge organ, and that it can play a role in different parts of your life. And so, when going to sleep, there's a difference between day cream and night cream. And what you'll find is that night cream have a higher amount of hydrating sort of ingredients and even promote themselves as hydrating as well. But it's making sure that because it has those hydrating ingredients doesn't necessarily mean that it's good for your skin as well. So it's finding a balance. But skincare side. Okay, Sam, go on, tell us.
Yeah, what's the ideal?
Your amazing, immaculate sleep hygiene.
Well, I think...
that'll put us all to shame.
I think so yeah, like, while I do... Obviously, like, one of my current areas of focus in research is sleep. It's not sleep hygiene. So certainly any sort of expertise I claim from sleep hygiene is not to do with the research that I do, because it's more to do with the quality of sleep, kind of from genetic factors and things like that, but rather from my own experiences of being 20, 21 and having a horrible routine and horrible relationship with bed and sleep and things like that. So the things that I kind of, I wouldn't almost call it like something that I think about, but rather it is just the daily routine that I have is, once it hits about 9 p.m, that's me done for the day, and I'm perfectly capable of working throughout the day. I will not work after 9 p.m. ever, and this is, you know, one of the things that I have firm rules when it comes to, I will not work after 9 p.m. It doesn't matter if I'm in a rush for something. I just try to plan things ahead and make sure that I have enough time to account for that thing. So I may work more during the day. Another thing that I don't do is procrastinate. So that kind of helps. That helps with things. Because again,
how do you not procrastinate?
It's honestly, it's to do with sleep. It's to do with ensuring that my day is basically buttressed or bordered by sleep. And these are immutable barriers that I have to my day that cannot psychologically for me or behaviorally be changed. Because if they are, I know how easy it is to kind of make the excuse, oh, just one more hour, just two more hours. It's fine. You'll be fine in the morning. But if you get into a habit of doing that, then your kind of mental clarity and the quality of work that you're capable of doing during the day will suffer over time. And there's evidence that shows that only a small amount of sleep deprivation on a single night is enough to significantly detriment your performance the following day. And actually, not to scare anybody, but there are certain indicators that may even lead to cellular metabolism issues, just a single day of bad sleep. So it is something that is very important to me.
Listeners, if you're listening, Sam's scaring
you. I'm not scaring anybody. I'm just saying that it is something that's really important. And so I do try to stay as strict as I can. Fun fact about sleep is that every single organism in nature that has a nervous system or any kind of tissue differentiation in terms of nervous, like sort of neuronally specialized cells, has some form of sleep, some form of something that we would call sleep. So it's actually something that is conserved between pretty much any organism that has a nervous system. And it's quite a clear cut. If it has a nervous system, it sleeps. If it doesn't, then it doesn't sleep. Although there are obviously still kind of dormant stages. But it's quite an interesting thing to think about, which we can talk about later. Anyway, my sleep routine, at 9 p.m., I will, around about 9 p.m., I'll sort of start getting ready for bed. I'd like to stretch before bedtime, but that's just because I do a lot of physical training and things like that. It helps me kind of wind down at the end of the day, but also it's just like, I just kind of need to do it just to make sure that my body stays functional for the army and things like that, exactly.
Fair enough.
So that's something that I'll do. I also have my kind of last meal of the day. I have at around sort of 8:30 at night as well. And it's a meal that I have with sleep in mind. So I like, it's basically a shake, but it has some slow digesting protein in it and also oats, because oats contain natural melatonin. I wouldn't say that I do it specifically for that reason, but it is, you know, something that I do think about a little bit in the back of my head, that I'm not having any kind of heavy, big meal late at night that my body has to really work on. And that's going to release a lot of sort of rapid, like sugary kind of energy. Instead, something that's going to let me sort of relax a little bit. Then I'll get into bed. I am a little bit. So one of the things that I have that technically goes against sleep hygiene, good sleep hygiene, that I think is going to be really interesting to have a discussion with. I find it very difficult to sleep in pitch black. So the absence of light, I find it very difficult to sleep in, and also the absence of noise. And I don't know if it's some kind of psychological thing, but I almost always, in fact, I pretty much do always fall asleep with some kind of TV or YouTube videos or something like that playing on dim, but still playing and still audible. I find it very difficult to, and I think part of it might be that when I'm left in the dark with kind of no sensory stimulation, then it's very easy for me to slip into my thoughts instead, and then my head can be quite noisy. Whereas if I have a little bit of external noise going on, then it's much more and a little bit of sensory stimulation, like a little bit of light, it's much easier for me to just focus on that noise instead and then drift off. It's really interesting though, that I find it very hard to sleep when I'm just in pitch black, quiet. I find it very hard to switch my brain off in that situation. But the main thing that I think I do, the two things, a firm routine that I stay, and I pretty much always wake up 7 a.m. the following day. I fall asleep at about 11, wake up at 7, 8 hours of sleep a night, very, very, very important. But firm bedtime, firm wake up time as well. And the other thing is a kind of protracted period of getting ready for bed. So not kind of just hopping in bed, that's it, done, but in kind of winding down towards bed, which obviously not everybody is able to do because some people are a little bit busier than I am, I guess. But I find those two things really, really important.
So I find it quite interesting because I know that you're not alone in saying that you need like external noises to help go to sleep. So I know like even one of my housemates, I only just found out recently, she loves white noise. Mm. She'll play like the Spotify playlist with like rainforest music or whale noises. And she, for the same reason as you say, like it helps take her mind off her own thoughts. Whereas I kind of take the time before going to sleep, the time to think about my thoughts, to think about like what I want to do, like reflect on the day in a sense. You know, like I do it, I use going to sleep, before going to sleep and shower as my time to think about like what I'm doing the next day or how I've done so far in the day, what I need to do. So I find that quite interesting. And to be fair, I think you're right in saying having a rigid sort of schedule actually helps you. I can understand that. I think I am definitely too lenient because I'll be like, oh, I can give it another 1 hour or so on this. I can make this better. But actually, there becomes a point, I'm sure, where the amount of work that you put into something or whatever you're doing at that point in time, it plateaus regardless. Yeah. And so actually, I think establishing a point at which you've done a lot of effort and knowing that if you put more effort, it's only going to increase it minusculely, then I think that's important to recognise. So you've definitely given us some thoughts to adapt our life.
That's definitely something I'm very, very adamant on. Is so when I was doing my undergrad at Cambridge, obviously lots of people work very, very hard. It was almost a bragging point. How long could you stay in the library at night? And there was a little bit of like a almost like a bragging about how much time, how much sleep you lose in the library. And I was always of the mindset of
I've seen that. 100%.
I've always kind of been like this, I think, but it's not so much to do with sleep, but I guess it's more of like a general attitude towards work and towards kind of the day in general. Is if I'm working, I'm working, and if I lose focus, I'm done. I'm not I'm going and I'm taking a walk, I'm taking a break, because I know that lots of those people who would spend, they boast about doing a 7 hour stint in the library of work. They would only work for about 3 of those hours and they would spend the other 4 hours in their own heads, thinking, listening to music, chatting and things like that. And I think I think that that's, well, it's not a terrible thing to do. I'm more of the mindset of if I'm going to sit down and work, I'm going to sit down and work. I have enough other things to be doing with my time that I, you know, if I'm not going to be sitting there working, there are other things that I want to be doing instead. So I would instead work 3-4 hours a day in 2 different chunks. I would still get the same amount of work done, but I would also just be much more, you know, strict with myself. I'm just not paying attention anymore. I'm done. Like, I'm not able to work anymore. That's me done. Time to go and do something else and then come back to it later. That is something that I found very, very helpful.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. And I think it's, to me, it's the quality of work, not the time you put into the work. And I think a lot of people try and compare, oh, I've done 12 hours of work on this. And the reality is, you might have done, but you've achieved the same as what I probably could have achieved in half the time because I was a bit, it's the way we worked. And I think it's important for people to realise, like, it's, a sleep hygiene, a sleep routine is tailored to you, but it should have like a firm sort of promotion of the key things about sleep hygiene. Obviously, you can make, there's going to be times where you have to be a bit more flexible when there's like events or something. You need to be up earlier or you're up later, but it's making sure that you go back to, fall back to that that normal routine for yourself.
I found that, especially this year, as a clinical year student, my first clinical year, there was a huge jump in time management. It shocked me at the start because suddenly I was on placement. I had lectures. I had work after placements. I had prep for placements to do after. Like, million and one things added to your schedule. And there was definitely a period of time where I was like, I just don't have time for anything. Like, I use the word, I don't have time for it, so many times. And that quality of quantity became very apparent to me very quickly. And this year especially, it has become very much more like, it forces you to, like, shorten the amount of time you spend on things. And I was like, oh, I'm not spending that much time. But the quality comes out to be pretty much the same. My work like, touch wood, hopefully, hasn't gone down. Like, my work quality hopefully hasn't gone down remarkably just because I spend less time at it. Because I've had to. I didn't have the liberty of spending 6 hours on this.
Yeah.
I had to spend 3 hours because that is all the time I had in a day. But
yeah.
It made me very quickly realize that actually, maybe I only needed 3 hours for this assignment. I did not need 6 hours for this assignment. And I think you realize that, especially in clinical
I think that's really important with regards to sleep as well. Like, you can get the work that you have to do in the day done faster if you kind of plan ahead for it. If you think about it when you're scheduling your day, when you think, right, this is a time that I'm going to be doing this. Like, when I'm sitting down and I'm planning out my meetings for the day, or I'm planning out when I'm going to do my studying and things like that, I have to kind of set blocks of the day apart, and it requires some forethought, maybe the day before or maybe on the weekend, just planning for the week. And sleep is the same. Mm-hmm. You can, the quality very much depends on your ability to actually plan for that. And people don't plan for their sleep. They just treat it as this thing that happens. It's just something that comes along at the end of the day. When actually, if you didn't plan your work, you wouldn't be able to work as effectively as you do when you have a crammed schedule. And similarly, when you have a crammed schedule, if you don't plan your sleep, sure, if you are sort of on a gap year and you have nothing to worry about and you can just spend all day sleeping, it's not something you have to think about. But then I think that can sometimes make people lazy about it. But when you are busy, you need to think about sleep. You need to plan sleep. Because quality of sleep is really important. The two kind of major things to think about when you're thinking about your sleep is, number one is the quality of sleep, making sure that you're not waking up throughout the night, that you are getting kind of a solid chunk of sleep. But the other one is duration of sleep, which in the literature is shown to be very, very significant. And there's this myth. I really want to dispel this myth because I think that it's been born out of our culture of work. Our culture of almost bragging how little sleep we get. If you go on YouTube videos from motivational speakers or people who have these big businesses, and they brag about how little sleep they get each night, they're like, you're not working hard enough if you're sleeping more than 4 hours a night. And there's this myth that has come out that 5 hours of sleep a night is all you need to physically survive. And it is just inexplicably, it's so false, completely untrue. Sleep deprivation really stems from anything over a long period of time less than about 7 hours of sleep a night. So less than 7 hours of sleep a night over an extended period of time is enough to yield some of the negative long-term elements of sleep deprivation. And so this idea that 5 hours of sleep is enough is just patently false, basically. So really, people should be aiming for more like in the range of 7 to 9 hours sleep. And this is the thing, okay? That seems like a lot to people, especially with busy lifestyles. But I think in a way, it says more about our relationship as a culture with sleep than it does about kind of individual people's ability to fit sleep into their schedules. And I think it's one of those things that as a society we should really try to get better at and kind of give a bit more importance in our day too, is just how important sleep is for longevity and health and things like that. You know, we can go into the details of why that is if you guys want, but it is really important, and we usually need more sleep than we think that we do.
Yeah, okay. I definitely am. I'm probably a victim of a lack of sleep because actually, to be fair, during the week, I probably sleep a maximum of 6 hours a night. But then I do make up for it when I come out the weekend in which I do have a sleep in. I know that's not healthy because I know, well, go on,
actually,
Sam.
So the concept of sleep debt is something that has been studied. And sleep debt exists in the sense that this is quite interesting, but if you say you get on average 6 hours of sleep a night during the week, but then on the weekend, You sleep.
We can.
You can. Yeah. You sleep 9 hours.
We can, and you campaign for sleep.
You sleep 9 hours or something like that, or you sleep 10 hours, and you manage to bring your average hours per night up by X amount. That does matter. That does have an effect.
Okay.
So that does actually count. So it's something that, you know, you might think that's not healthy. There is, and it's, there's not a huge amount of evidence. It's not something that's been researched in that much detail. So if you feel guilty about getting more sleep on the weekend but then less during the week, you don't really have anything to feel necessarily to feel guilty about. At least it's better than not getting any sleep across the board, basically.
Yeah. So any listeners who, if you have lie-ins on the weekend, clip this and send it to your parents. Yeah. Stop you waking up. Waking you
exactly.
up.
Exactly. We fully this endorse
the exact
it.
Reason why we're doing it.
Yeah. I've noticed that, like, there'll be nights where I'm not physically tired mm-hmm. from going to sleep. This was, like, in previous years. And what I've noticed is that how I now start my day is I'll probably do a workout and do exercise during the day. And I find that by the time I get to bed, I'm quite tired. Mm-hmm. I ensure that I do something physical during the day. Because from my understanding, a healthy exercise regime, maybe not every day, but like doing something that's physical, be it yoga, Pilates, a run, can promote a better sleep cycle as well mm-hmm. In the long term. So that was just something interesting I found.
Yeah, and I think something like that kind of, it helps you as well. So, you know, it might shorten the amount of time that you're lying there in bed without actually entering your kind of like sleep sleep cycle, I don't know what, but and yeah. starting to fall asleep essentially. Mm-hmm. I think yeah. if you're not tired, you're more likely to stay awake in bed.
Eight, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. No, one of the points actually I had about that was, do you know there are many apps and kind of gadgets and stuff nowadays on our phones or on Apple Watches.
Okay, we'll okay. finish this point and then we'll end it, Sam. How does that sound? Cool. Yeah, cool. Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Cool. What was I going to say?
Sorry. You're saying about apps and phones. Go on, start again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that there are many apps nowadays on smartwatches or on your phones that kind of help you keep a track of sleep and like how long you've slept for, and kind of like you can see a schedule building up, and also
yeah
they claim to be able to kind of assess your movements and then naturally wake you up and things. Any thoughts on
well
that?
I know for like I know that on Apple phones now, you when you want to set an alarm, you can set an alarm for how like for when you want to go to sleep by, so then it can calculate what time you should technically wake up by, yeah. which I think is really useful and more people should engage with. I think, like you said, obviously try the different apps, try out white noise playlists on Spotify or whatever music sort of apps that you use. And also, you know, be conscious about the time that you're spending on the screen, like screens, be it TV, laptops, PlayStations, phones. I think another app that's really useful is Screen Time mm-hmm. on your iPhones. I know, I don't know if Android has a similar one, but it can record how long you're on your phone, and you can see your habits when you most engage with your phone. Mm-hmm. For instance, you know, is it at night, and should you be trying to reduce that? So that's something that you can tailor to your own sort of lifestyle.
Yeah, but I feel like those apps are more like a habit tracker. But like if you're having problems with sleep, I think like Halima, you previously mentioned, it'd be better to go and see a healthcare professional, your GP, and speak about that, because I don't know the technology that goes behind these apps. So I think you just need to be careful with that as well.
Yeah, there's a fine line. You don't want, you know, we're obviously encouraging just good habits to do with sleep. And if you think there is a problem with the actual the actual sleep quality itself, or for whatever reason that you're being woken in the night, then I think that definitely going to see someone in the healthcare is the best way forward. And don't try going along normally, like just, you know, plodding along, because you sleep, as we've all stressed, is really important.
Yeah. I think we've had a really good discussion about...
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think we've talked about some of the do's and don'ts. I think the big one for me, I think, is to be a bit more rigid with my sleep schedule.
Yeah.
And a bit more like adopt a bit more of a Sam approach to my sleep. And I guess if you've enjoyed this episode on sleep hygiene, it would be really good in future if maybe we do an episode on like sleep quality, mm-hmm. and, you know, what is sleep, and like do a bit more of a deep dive on it and sort of break down the different parts of sleep and sort of more molecular side of it, as slightly mentioned by Sam's research at the moment. So I think that would be a good future episode.
I agree. I think I would definitely be interested too.
Yeah, for sure.
If you want to get in touch, please email us at inspiredjournalpodcast@gmail.com or contact us through our social media. Please like or follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter at inspiredjournalpodcast, and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Spotify or any other podcasting platform. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue to bring you the content that you love. The Inspire podcast is brought to you by the Inspire Student Journal. You can visit our journal website at www.inspirestudentjournal.co.uk to find out more. See you next time.
We're students and we're all still learning, so we appreciate any comments, feedback or error corrections related to the topics discussed. All research presented is correct without recording. Any medical information provided does not constitute official medical advice. Consult your own physician for any medical issues that you may be experiencing. Views expressed in the Inspire Journal podcast are of the hosts and guests, do not represent the views of the Inspire Student Journal or the institutions we are attached to.